Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We are so excited today to have in the studio with us Senator Gene Davis on the left. Welcome, Gene.
Thank you.
And on the political right, my co-host, Senator Dan McKay.
Good morning, everybody.
Well, there's big political news this week. Let's talk about Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox announces
Utah's worst kept secret, right?
Yeah, worst kept secret. We knew he was going to run. How did you learn about this, Dan?
Logged into social media first thing in the morning, and
there it was.
And there it was.
You didn't know it was. You didn't get anything the night before.
Oh heavens, no, no.
Okay.
Okay. I love the way they did it, and I thought their video was very well done. So I watched the video and the announcement. And I was excited because you watch it and it is everything I love about campaign season, which is a candidate's opportunity to define themselves to the people. And I think Spencer did a great job of that.
Yeah. Gene, how about on the political left? We're going to spend a little bit of time on this so you don't feel like you have to say everything. But how did you learn about it? What were your thoughts?
I heard about it on the news. I saw bits and pieces of his release piece. And he did a pretty good job. He didn't sell me, and I don't think, which should come as no surprise, but I think, the lieutenant governor and I have got along very, very well over the years. I think he's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's learned well on the job,
mm-hmm.
but I really wonder if he's ready to step right in and become governor. I see somebody with a little more...
Interesting.
Maturity, if you will.
Okay.
Not somebody that when he gets to be governor, he puts his feet up on the desk and says, I'm now in charge.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, that may have been humorous, but I found that to be a little bit, high schoolish.
Yeah.
I want
to take this and run with it for a second because I'm with Dan in the sense that he's defining himself and something really interesting happened. So, first of all, he announced it on Twitter.
Yeah.
Second of all, he did it with a video.
Yeah.
And then third, if you watch the video, it's him and his wife, Abby.
And kids, yeah.
Yeah, but he's almost never alone except for like when he's filling up his gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all we,
yeah,
you know,
we.
Abby and I, this, that, and the
Smart.
Other. And then tons of female images in it.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down to, there's one point where he expresses real empathy for the people in rural Utah. He says, I love them,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is kind of it's a really warm thing to say.
Yeah.
And then there's that logo, green.
Yeah.
Which, you know, usually political candidates, I know there's a ton of exceptions, but they're usually in the red, white, and blue kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
But this felt to me like a handoff was occurring between baby boomers and a 44-year-old leader in Spencer Cox. And I would love to get your quick reaction to that, and then I want to share some numbers with you. Let's go to Dan first.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm trying to set up?
Yeah.
up. Gene says, I wonder if he's ready.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, well, it might be time for a 44-year-old to be in that office.
Yeah.
Because let me just share these numbers with you. I looked them up. Baby boomers, we have 515,000 in the state.
Okay.
Gets smaller every day.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're dying off. Of the Generation Xers, 620,000.
Yeah.
That's Spencer Cox's cohort or generation. And the Millennials, 878,000.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so my point is that maybe this state is ready for this this younger governor. Dan, quick reaction, then we'll go to Gene.
Well, there's no question that the next governor will be younger than the last governor. I mean, I think that will be very clear.
Yep.
Regardless of who runs, that field is clear.
So Spencer Cox is 43, 44, something like that. Herbert is?
60, oh, man. Maybe he might be even early 70s.
Okay.
He's very young for his
sense
age,
of it.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Guy plays tennis,
athlete,
very active.
Yeah.
But I will say, when I was touched by several of the images in the announcement, I think it was genuine Spencer, right? That's the Spencer we all know.
Mm-hmm. And authentic.
It was authentic, which is, I think, his strongest quality, right?
Uh-huh.
His only mistake in the video, right? We're talking about rural Utah, and I would say the only mistake is he drove a Nissan truck in to get gas. And anybody who's been into rural Utah, there is probably one, maybe two Nissan trucks in all of rural
Gene, leave
Utah.
Leave it to Dan to see a detail like that.
Sorry. That's the one thing, right? You are looking for, I've been around campaigns for a long time. You're looking for apple pie, ice cream, and family fun. That is every campaign video you can find it, right? And everything represents.
He had a lot of that in there.
He also had
sort of a Utah Jazz look to his logo. Some people have made, you know, commented on that. And then it had the John Deere colors in it.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Gene, so with that as background, let's hear you react to that again.
When I said mature, I did not mean by age. I meant someone who had been on the ground, had been in the battle, had actually moved forward in setting some good public policy, which I haven't seen.
So Gene for governor.
Well, because that's well,
I caught him.
Well, because Dan, that's where we're going. Because Gene, can you give us any names from the left that will be on this ballot or that are seriously considering?
Let me tell you
it?
Something. I am seriously looking about and talking to people, and I'm looking for someone who. Really, takes a look.
Are you talking to people about you being on the ballot?
No, no. I'm not.
I'm not talking about me.
No. The Democratic Party appreciates that because right now they got nobody.
Okay. Keep going, Dan. You're talking to people.
And I think the one thing that I want to see in a governor is someone who looks at the education problem and just doesn't look at it and talk about it and be afraid to address it in a financial way. And say, we've got to do this. We've got to put this in. We've got to move it forward. Someone who can stand there and not try to figure a way to politically make Medicaid expansion happen, but to actually take it out there and say, this is what's right for the people of Utah.
This is my proposal.
This is the leader. This is what I'm looking for.
And you're worried that you don't see that in our current Lieutenant Governor?
I don't see that right now. And I know he's in the back seat.
Yeah.
But I remember having conversation with Governor Herbert, and he had goals on his mind and where he wanted to see the state go, totally, as he talked with Huntsman as governor. And he was lieutenant governor. He had goals and ambitions and things he wanted to see.
You saw that leadership in him.
I saw that in him at that time.
Can you give us any names on the D side? Just speculating. Because what's throwing me off is that nobody's even – the only name I have heard is a former senator who used to work for IBM, Scott Howell.
That's the
only name I've heard.
And, you know, I haven't even –
And I don't think Scott's the one putting his name out there, by the way.
Usually that's what you're getting is people that want to kind of float the air balloon.
You don't think he is?
I will say there's a few Republican guys, a few Republican candidates who are out there, and they're floating their own name to get interest.
Yeah.
But – on the Dem side, I don't know, maybe Scott is, but I just, he's had that race before, and I'm not sure that's his thing.
I took a take a look at folks like Brian King, established leader, moving forward. I see his name in there, hopefully, and
that would be, I mean, that would lead to what I like to see, which is the quality of the debate, the competition of ideas. Brian can definitely do that.
He is. He would be equally yoked.
And I have not talked to Brian about this.
Yeah, it's fair.
But as and you asked me to make an observance, and I take a look at some of the folks that are running for mayor of Salt Lake City.
A very talented field.
Very, very talented. And most all, if not all, are Democrat and have voiced that. The thing is, you make the millennials at 800,000 in the state of Utah plus is the population. They want progressive. They want to move this state forward. They want a clean air. They want a better education system. They want things.
This is where,
and they aren't afraid of taxes.
And this is where Spencer Cox becomes so intriguing because he is completely seen as a problem-solving, productive, middle kind of person. I think he has a lot of appeal to Democrats. I don't know if you would agree with me, Gene, but as I've watched the social media, he's got plenty of people saying, I'm a Republican now if this guy's running. And so, what will we see from the right of Spencer Cox?
Well, everyone is to the right of Spencer.
Okay. You might have your candidate, Gene and Spencer.
Just based on your Democratic comment.
I don't really believe that, but some might.
Yeah. I will say, though, the overall the field will be broad. There'll be a lot of people, I think, in this race, and you'll still see some people will jump in, and they'll be, you know, it's interesting because there are those who've kind of already sort of announced that they're in, and did not get as much fanfare. So I do think, you know, having Paul Edwards work in the governor's office mm-hmm. is certainly helping Spencer on the Earn Media for his announcement mm-hmm. compared to others, because this is getting covered. I mean, today KSL did a big story where, you know, a reporter went down to his hometown and interviewed people. And there are others who kind of announced and they're not getting that same image. So it is interesting. But one thing I think that is really hard for Spencer is being a front runner early in a race like this. Yeah. Is not beneficial because everyone's looking at you.
Yep, and you can peak too early. And so you're going to see Greg Hughes make an announcement. We all believe that.
Yep.
He'll run a very feisty campaign, I would guess.
No doubt.
Thomas Wright may or may not enter the mm-hmm. campaign, but he has incredible street cred with a lot of conservatives.
Well-liked.
Yeah, and someone I think quite highly of. So it could get interesting real fast.
Yeah, the front runner gets a target quickly.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Gene Davis and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Gene Davis on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We spent the first segment talking about Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox announcing his candidacy for governor. We're going to jump to some other issues now, and I want to bring up first this issue that we read about in the press of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints now having maybe a calling or something within the faithful where they will have a specialist within their congregations that helps with political involvement or political education or engagement. As I understand it, this is mostly about registering to vote, knowing about how the system works, just all these sort of things that you need to know in civil society. But it raised some eyebrows. What are you thinking, Gene, on this one?
You know, I'm really have some real problem with this. I think the neutrality piece that the LDS Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, has carried on for a number of years now is not really a workable piece. People know that the leadership of the church leans a certain way on a lot of issues. I think having a specialist at that level, mm-hmm. and at that level, it's too one-on-one. Will it follow a pattern that is set on high?
Yeah.
Or will it fall apart?
It can be
there
abused.
On very easily abused.
Yeah, it
and
can be
I've
abused.
Seen that abuse coming out.
Yeah.
I know candidates
the,
who
the implementation of it is fraught with problems.
No, it's not.
Okay, Dan, defend
it's
it.
It's awesome. It is about time. I'm just going to say this. It is about time. Groups organize all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody expects religious or church-growing people to sit, you know, ineptly on the sideline, disorganize themselves, and sit and wait for policies to come down that they either object to or they like, right? Mm-hmm. That is irrational. No group should be sitting on the sideline, period. My favorite thing about the whole reporting on the issue is every time you see a Democratic leader quoted in the article, they're always talking about how awesome it is to have more involvement, more, we need to reach out, we need to do all these things. We can't be IDing people at the voting booth. We can't require them to be citizens. You can't do any of those things. But the minute the religious think about being organized and voting, the Dems are like, well, I don't know if we want that participation. We
Dan,
probably need other parts.
You're operating at a philosophical level.
Okay, fair.
Let's talk about really what it does. Go ahead, Dan.
I mean, that's down on
makes the world a better place.
On the base of it, and if you want to really get into this ideological discussion that you want to bring forward. You have to remember, before statehood, this was a democratic state, solid in the blue column. One of the agreements that was made, according to the history books that I've read, is the fact that at that time, they needed the Republican vote in Washington, D.C. to become a state. Mm-hmm. And what they did is went down the row at Church House and said, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican,
R.D.
And that's how the political party came about. And an agreement was made on top that they would be Republicans. And it has followed. And it's strengthened since the turn of the century, since our statehood. This state has gone from Democrat, a blue state, through a very, very strong now, where people especially other Democrats outside of the state of Utah, look at Utah and say, it's just not going to happen.
Okay.
So we don't have political balance, and that's a problem. That's an ideological problem.
So much so that we can almost not name a Democratic candidate for governor.
I have heard from my fellow leadership on the other side of the aisle come to me in private conversation and say, we need more Democrats. How can we get more Democrats up here? We need that balance for discussion.
And Gene, just for the listeners,
they will not help me.
You don't think by having these,
if you can't quote them, I'm not going to believe
it. You don't think by having these specialists, you'll get more Democrats, you'll get more Republicans. That's what you're worried about.
That's the problem.
No, I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at the fact that individuals, when they're told not to, you know, to read, to understand, and to make their own decisions. Now you have somebody down there that is telling him from an ecclesiastical point of view, mm-hmm. you need to vote this way.
Well,
and that is wrong, that because is that takes
way,
away.
Yeah. That is not the way this is going to work. Yeah. I will guarantee.
Well, if that happens, it would be reported.
That's how it breaks down.
Okay, but all that stuff is already reported all the time. That is the subject of every other Raleigh column, right? So let's get out of that.
Didn't he retire?
Well, maybe. I don't know.
It's just a figure of speech at this point.
Everybody
knows
what it
is. At least he didn't say Raleigh and Wells.
Yeah. So so let's think. You're thinking too far back. The 80s, Utah was solidly a blue state. In the 80s, under the Matheson, you know, and coming out of the Matheson area.
We went back and forth.
Yeah, but truly...
The
late
issue,
70s.
As we have talked about it several times, was Roe v. Wade, and that's what drove a stake in the Democrats' hearts in Utah. And the crazy thing is, it's still present in our policy and conversation today. Look at Alabama. I mean, we're not going to shift gears to that yet. But I'll tell you, if you want Democrats, or if you want more Democrats in Utah, Mormons love life. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they love life. And everything inside of them, they are divided on that one issue over and over again. And I tell you, if your party would join the right side of protecting the unborn, I will tell you all day long, you will have a plethora of Democrats.
It'll grow in Utah.
And you know as well as I do that that's a choice issue. And you even agree with that yourself.
I will leave that.
That there will be, that there is a choice to be made in there.
Well, should we talk
because
about
nothing,
that?
Because nothing has mandated. Nothing has been mandated in that area.
Yeah.
And I disagree with you that it's the total abortion. It has been made a wedge issue in the state of Utah because it's been so easy to grab hold of.
I see.
Based upon your life thing. But if you go back and really take a look at where it really turned when... And I'm going to go back to religion again. Mm-hmm. It's when Ezra Taft Benson went to BYU and said a person can't be a good Mormon and a Democrat at the same time. And that began the resonance that has moved forward
Long
since
live
there.
Ezra Taft Benson.
How do you think that made Harry Reid feel?
You kidding?
Given
I emboldened him.
How do you
really
feel trajectory.
Great.
Hey, just on the from the political middle.
Senator Moss feel.
Yeah.
I mean,
from the political middle, I worry a lot about this type of thing having ecclesiastical overreach.
I agree.
You know, and so I'm all for helping people know how to vote and how our process works. But I think of that as the risk of ecclesiastical overreach outweighs in some ways the benefit.
Oh, interesting.
So, kind of crazy.
It will be very interesting to watch. I think it will be much less nefarious than everyone thinks it will be.
The roughest.
Long live Ezra Taft Benson.
Hey, let's spend just 1 second. The news hit this week that the LDS Church had refused to sign on to the Equality Act.
Yeah, the Equality Act that the House passed in the U.S. House.
This would outlaw sexual orientation and gender identity-based discrimination in housing and hiring.
Oh.
Other areas of public life. Just to set this up, though.
It's being debated, though. Sorry, not passed.
Okay. Well, you know, the way to think of this, though, is there's this tug-of-war going on in our society between religious freedom and LGBTQ rights,
mm-hmm.
and understandably so. That's going to break down into extremes on the religious liberty side and extremes on the equality side, if you can think of one, because there is a way that equality can interfere with religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be some place in the middle where like 90% of all the issues are taken care of. That's what I want to see. And I think that's what they call the Fairness for All Act. Mm. And that's much more like what we passed here in our state statute on housing employment discrimination.
Of course, D.C. will not look to Utah for an example.
That makes sense, Gene. In other words, what you all passed up on Capitol Hill.
I was part of that debate and discussion.
Was 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Three, 4 years ago. And
they called it the Utah model nationally.
It started long before that. I take a look at the religious freedom. Is it one's own individual religious rights, or is it the rights of an organized religion against people they want to discriminate against?
Yeah.
That's a question that I have.
Yeah, interesting. Hey, let's stick with Gene for just 1 second. McAdams reelection campaign. I'm going to him first, Dan, because, you know, you have a jaded picture here. That I'm only saying that, listeners, because some people think he will challenge the good congressman. But he's already getting targeted by the National Republican Party. He had a really tight race. He's in a perpetual campaign right now. What are you seeing, Gene?
You know, Jim Matheson had the same problem. Jim Matheson proved that he could deliver for the people of the state of Utah throughout a district that was even more rural and red than this district is.
Yeah.
Ben McAdams has proven that he can get along on both sides, that he can look at the issues and discern right from wrong, good from evil, and that he is looking forward, I think, for another run, whoever his opposition is.
Yeah.
But he has a record to defend, and I think he has a good record.
Yeah.
That is easier to defend than his opponent last time.
Yeah. Dan, do you see Mia Love getting back into this in any way, shape, or form? She's thrown out a couple of things where she hasn't taken it off.
She would certainly change the conversation for everybody, and
because if she did it, others would let her have it.
She did, no question. And I think Mia, I think she has a legitimate claim on the fact that she lost to medical marijuana and not to Ben McAdams, right? And I think
turnout
for medical marijuana.
How can you argue that turnout?
Medicaid expansion.
But how can you argue that turnout, wasn't fair?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Nobody can make that argument.
Okay.
What I can make is, and we saw this in the background over and over, but when you have four-hour voter lines in your district, it is hard to argue that.
I'm glad you clarified
in
that.
In a district that is 70% Mia and 30% Ben from a result standpoint down in Utah County, I think it was even higher actually. It was like 75 or 77, but let's just say 70-30.
Yeah.
When you look at that type of results and you look at four-hour lines and somebody shows up to get in line, say, how long have you been in line? I've been here 4 hours. People aren't going to stick around. And I will just say, I don't know how many votes that cost her. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how many it cost Ben either. But statistically, I know what a lot of people would do when the hurdle to vote is so high now that when you add an additional hurdle of a four-hour line, I think a lot of people walked away from the polls really unfortunately. And I personally...
What was the margin?
750 votes, something like that, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But I think you look at that number and you're like, well, could she have found 750 votes in that four-hour wait? I don't know.
Well, I'm not – remember that even those who were voting for Ben McAdams were standing in that four-hour line as the Republican.
Only in Utah County. Those,
and the one thing is
– which is a county if you had lost vote by, if you 70
had,
to 30.
If you had vote by mail, could have changed that.
Yeah.
Dramatically changed it. Which they had in Salt Lake County.
Gene, you bring up great points. Dan and Gene, we have to go to our gripes. 2 minutes left.
Yes.
I don't know, Gene, if you have a gripe that you're thinking about, or should we go to Dan first?
I will say...
Dan's raising his hand.
Yeah, I will just say that my gripe is, you know, everybody asks, what happened on the Hill today, right? You get that question no matter where you are. What happened on the Hill today? And you think back, you're like, well, I know we did a bunch of stuff. You know, we talked about this, but your head is so – committee work is so different than like voting on the floor or all these other
it's
things.
It's granular, right?
It's so granular. Uh-huh. You're hearing reports. You're getting audit things, and you're talking about what you're going to talk about
this
summer.
There's no way to give a quick answer to granular stuff.
And so that's my one thing is interim day was today. It was a great day, but I do miss, you know – we did confirm some people, so I guess we have that.
I'm glad you're in state government, because if you were in local government, it would all be granular.
Yeah, that's right.
Gene, what's your gripe?
My gripe is the fact that we had interim today, A lot of things happen. Mm-hmm. I'm on the Revenue Tax Committee, for an example. We talked about some changes in tax law and everything else. When I get home, the number one issue is going to be, what happened in Washington, D.C. today? Mm. People do not focus on what's going on around them here in the state of Utah.
Mm. Yeah, great gripe. My quick gripe, I'm just tired of traffic jams. I got in some yesterday. 4th South was just a mess, and I just got boxed in, and I had an appointment, and I don't know. I sometimes think they should be doing more after hours and not during rush hour, closing down lanes during rush hour. I'm Natalie Gochner. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. The program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.